Now to the research on COVID vaccine nasal sprays, and there's a COVID vaccine tracker that's maintained by the Regulatory Affairs Professional Society. It says there are currently about 100 COVID vaccine candidates in development. Only a handful use an intranasal spray. So why is that? Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 to join in. Dr. Paul Spearman directs the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. It's operating a vaccine research center that is conducting 11 clinical trials of COVID vaccines, including an intranasal COVID vaccine. Dr. Spearman, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's zoom in on the clinical efforts for a nasal spray and what this type of, you know, how does it differ from the injection COVID vaccines?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of theoretical reasons why you might want a nasal spray rather than something injected in your arm. You know, one of the primary things would be to generate immune responses right there where the virus first attacks the nose and the upper respiratory tract so that you can fight off the very early steps of virus replicating. So before it can get to the lung and cause severe disease. So that's something we're really hopeful for with these intranasal vaccines. You know, another really important thing that we are hopeful for as well is that we might be able to prevent transmission of virus once someone is exposed to virus. If you can control it in the respiratory tract, maybe we won't be spreading it to others. So those are two of the big reasons. Probably the third is really just the ease of administration. If we could get to something that, you know, everyone can just get a single spray up the nose or a couple of sprays up the nose, that would be terrific. So those are the real advantages that we're hoping for and hoping to evaluate in our current trials.
There was this analogy I read about yesterday in Bloomberg Business, and they said that these nasal sprays put guards in front of a building rather than stationing guards inside the building to protect it. And that kind of was like a little bit of a light bulb moment for me on what the capability of these nasal sprays could be.
That's a very interesting analogy. I didn't see that one. That's probably appropriate if we can get our immune system right up front in the nose to be guarding us against the virus. That is a good analogy.
So is every nasal environment different, though? How can you know for sure you're giving someone the proper dosage?
Well, we have to evaluate that in our phase one clinical trials and sometimes in phase two clinical trials, where we try to establish what is the ideal dosage and what type of immune response are these vaccines giving us. And then, of course, in the long run, we need to evaluate how well they're adding protection in the real world to people who are exposed to virus. So those are, you know, different steps in vaccine evaluation. And right now, most of these intranasal vaccines are really in the phase one trial where they're just initially establishing safety and in some cases getting to the right dose of the vaccine to put in your nose.
Why are there so few of them?
That's a good question. I think because it's not what you would think of as the first generation vaccine. It's, you know, usually we think of a vaccine as something you inject and you generate a systemic immune response. There have not been a large number of intranasal vaccines, you know, over the years that have been marketed. There is the live attenuated flu vaccine, which is still available and was very effective, especially in the early years after it came out. It just hasn't been really deployed a lot in recent years. But that's a kind of a model for an intranasal vaccine, was the live flu vaccine.
You mean the flu mist? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
And that debuted in the early 2000s. So that's been around for decades. Is that right?
That's correct. And yet we haven't seen an explosion of other intranasal vaccines, really. But maybe the time is now. We have new vectors. We have, you know, new technologies to try to get better immune responses in the nasal tract.
When you say a live attenuated, can you explain the technology that you're using in a nasal spray version of a vaccine?
Well, the technology for one of the trials, this is the one that I'm working most closely with, is a new vector that's called parainfluenza virus type 5. So that itself is a canine or dog virus that we think is completely harmless in humans. And so this canine virus is now made to express the spike glycoprotein of SARS-CoV-2, the COVID virus. And so when that harmless virus is put into the nose and now can make the spike protein, then your body reacts to the spike protein. And so keep in mind, this is not SARS-CoV-2 we're putting mm-hmm. in anyone's nose. This is just a harmless virus that has been derived from actually a vaccine that's often used in dogs for the canine distemper. So
infectious disease physician Paul Spearman with us leads the clinical vaccine trials at Cincinnati Children's as we discuss the research around creating a nasal spray to help fight COVID infection. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up ahead with Dr. Spearman here on the Ideas Network. And now we explore the science of nasal sprays and whether they're poised to be the next line of defense in fighting COVID. Some virologists think a nasal spray could tell the body to create defenses in the sinuses and the throat and allow us to start fighting illness much faster than, say, a shot in the arm. Your questions, welcome, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Infectious disease physician Paul Spearman is running COVID vaccine trials at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and stays with us. So, Dr. Spearman, if the trial for this nasal vaccine goes well, what is the path forward for it? What do you expect a positive outcome to yield for a nasal spray?
Yeah, I think our first outcome we're really looking at is that this is safe and well tolerated, and then that it induces a really good immune response, both in the nasal tract, but also systemically. We want to see that it can boost responses of individuals who've received other COVID vaccines like the mRNA vaccines, because I think that's where this would really be useful. So someone who has already developed some immunity, but you know that the antibodies maybe decline over time, and then you give an intranasal dose that potentially could stimulate those antibodies again. And so you get both systemic and local responses and provide, we hope, enhanced protection because of that mucosal protection in the nasal tract.
You see a real booster potential here, perhaps.
That's exactly what we're looking for. And so if we can see that in the current trial that we're doing, then we would go on to larger trials that eventually would get us to discussions with the FDA about what it would be required to get this vaccine authorized as a booster or eventually licensed as a booster. So that would occur later this year. Right now we're in the phase one trial, really establishing the safety and the immunogenicity.
Couldn't you envision a nasal spray vaccine potentially being available for people to take at home?
Oh, that's a really good question. It would make sense that could be done. I don't know if that would be part of the licensure. We'd have to think about that with the companies that are developing these vaccines, you know, whether that could be an at-home vaccine versus one that you'd get in a pharmacy or in a doctor's office.
Right, because there is a barrier for people. They have to go somewhere to get that COVID vaccine. They have to either visit the pharmacy or they have to visit the doctor's office. And I'm wondering if the nasal spray could be more accessible in that regard.
You know, it is possible. I think right now we still have the restrictions on, you know, carefully managing the temperature and monitoring exactly when the vaccine is given and that sort of thing. But as time goes on with these trials, that's a really good consideration, Kate. I think we should discuss that with these companies that are developing the intranasal vaccines and see if that's part of their plan.
Well, switching gears just a bit here, as you work at a children's hospital, when do you expect that children age 6 months to 5 years will qualify for a COVID vaccine?
Yeah, that we get a lot of queries now, as you can imagine. We have to say that we don't really know. As everyone knows, Pfizer and Moderna have already submitted data to the FDA that the FDA is reviewing, but the exact timing of when they're going to come up with an authorization for this really important age group, I just hate to speculate because we thought that may have already happened by now, and we certainly hope that there'll be some decisions on that within the next month or two. But I wish I knew better, and I could tell you exactly when that'll be available. Because, yeah, we hear from parents. Well, I just was on a plane yesterday talking to someone sitting next to me that, you know, when are we going to have this vaccine for my child? And I can feel that from all the people who are contacting us.
What was it like flying for you without masks on the airplane?
Well, I can tell you, we were going to a medical meeting, and so all of us medical people, we were all wearing masks. There were quite a few people not wearing masks, but we're trying to be good examples and follow what CDC says rather than a federal judge who makes a ruling. So it was odd feeling, though. It really was.
Do you feel that we have only a couple seconds left? Do you feel that people should continue wearing masks?
Well, I think they should decide for their own health. And, you know, I think we want to keep ourselves well. If you're in a certain like closed space or next to someone who is not masked, you know, you've got to make that decision for yourself. And I think the fact that many doctors are following this masking, even on these places where you don't have to, maybe that's a good sign of what we should be doing.
Dr. Spearman, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Paul Spearman is director of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Ahead this hour, it's Wisconsin's new clean energy plan. And we explore what you want out of this plan, how our state's energy goals hit home. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.